The Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, CEPA, signed between India and the United Arab Emirates, came into force in May 2022. The UAE-India CEPA is expected to boost the total value of bilateral trade in goods to over $100 billion and in services to over $15 billion within 5 years. In 2022, Indonesia and the UAE agreed on a similar deal, and talks with Thailand and Malaysia are ongoing. DP World, the Dubai-owned multinational logistics company, announced a $510 million investment to build a new container terminal in the Indian state of Gujarat. The local business chamber of the UAE added 11,000 Indian-owned companies, bringing the total number of companies to 83,000. Dubai Multi-Commodities Center, the UAE's largest free trade zone, is home to over 770 Chinese firms. The signs of a thriving business and investment environment between Asia-Pacific and the UAE are hard to miss. What are the implications for some of the key players? How can investors and businesses navigate this transforming landscape? Welcome to Asia Perspectives from Economist Impact. I'm Bilge Arslan. You are listening to the 10th episode of the series, Shelter from the Storm, Investing in the Era of Uncertainty. In our previous episode, we discussed how investments can create positive social and environmental impact in Asia-Pacific. Today, we will talk about the investment and business landscape between Asia-Pacific and the United Arab Emirates. The podcast series is supported by Equities First. The opinions of our guests are their own, and editorial control remains with Economist Impact. Two guests are joining us today to share their expertise on the topic. Joining us from London, we have Pratipa Taker, Editorial Director for Middle East and Africa at the Economist Intelligence Unit, the business information arm of the Economist Group. Pat's intellectual leadership informs analysis and forecasts for the Middle Eastern and African markets to provide key insights for the international decision makers. Great to have you join us today, Pat.
Thank you, Bilge.
From Dubai, we have Shankar. Shankar is the co-founder and chief executive officer at Gateway Partners, a Singapore and Dubai-based emerging markets investment firm, investing across South Asia, Southeast Asia, Middle East, and Africa. Prior to Gateway Partners, Shankar held senior positions in Standard Chartered and Bank of America. Shankar, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Let's jump right into it. I want to start by understanding the general landscape a bit. So what are some of the pull and push factors that really attract businesses and investors from Asia-Pacific to the UAE? For instance, policies related to lifestyle, trade, building the necessary infrastructure, and so on. Pat, let's start with you.
I would like to just kick off by saying UAE is not standing still. Post-pandemic, managing a number of global and domestic headwinds, including geopolitical risks rising. And what it's doing is building very much more bricks on its already world-class infrastructure, logistics, corporate networks. It's not just Asia networks, it's the West and South as well. Very much on the back of that, creating a favorable, easy operating environment for investors. It ranks highly at a regional and global level in business operating and investment environment rankings across the world. For instance, EIU's business economic rankings, UAE is right at the top from a regional perspective, number one. And from a global perspective, where we rank almost 180 countries, it's 15th for the following years as well. Very much a similar position is recorded on our other services, EIU operational risk. So what is it supported by? I would say right at the top is the open trading regime, free flow of capital, of course, the infrastructure, and also very much the pull factor here is tax system. UAE does not levy income tax on individual. VAT is also low at 5%. Still remaining at that compared to its neighbor, Saudi Arabia, which is 15%, brought in during the pandemic. And corporate tax rates are some of the most competitive in the world, 9%, for instance, on taxable profits over 375,000 dinars. Also, very much building on that is very important for investors. There are no restrictions on the right to transfer funds, including repatriation of profits, and highly unlikely that any such restrictions will be introduced in the coming year. More than anything, also, companies operating in the free zones can pay 0% tax on income from certain qualifying activities. Finally, I would say being part of an increasingly connected and integrated GCC across all the states is another pull factor for the UAE. UAE is a major business hub and remain the case for the foreseeable future.
When I moved to Dubai in 2011, what I witnessed here is a geoeconomic and geopolitical shift truly of tectonic proportions. And rightly so, because, you know, Middle East, UAE is very much part of Asia, and it accounts for 60% of global population and about 50% of global GDP. And unlike Europe, it's still growing. And South-South trade and investment flows have been the major engine of growth globally in recent economic history, and UAE is right at the epicenter of it. What attracts people to UAE, and that's also possibly true for a few other countries in the GCC, is the safety, the security, the stability, or the ease of doing business, superb connectivity, low taxes, and a government that works. You have a leadership that is driven, which wakes up every morning saying, how can I do it better? How can I do it faster? It has an infrastructure that works. It's both hard and soft infrastructure. It has terrific institutions, and it has a set of incentives which are nonpareiled. It offers people a lifestyle, global feel. The Golden Visa program has been a tremendous success. It has got fantastic schools, fantastic healthcare. It is becoming a global center.
Going back to your experience in Dubai, Shankar, which parts of the UAE have stronger synergies with Asia Pacific?
I believe, obviously, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Ras Al Khaimah, up the list among the seven Emirates. Obviously, the GCC-China trade corridor is booming. But also, don't forget the importance of India, Indonesia in this entire equation. And in the case of India, it is not only the trade and investment flows, which will be the driver. Regional connectivity is a huge priority, and discussions are already on the way in terms of the India, Middle East, Europe economic corridor. This is regarded as a major driver of India's integration, not just with the UAE, but also Europe, and as a possible counterpoint to the Belt and Road Initiative. Also, Saudi is an important player, of course, in this equation in terms of supply chain. Moving away from just Dubai and Abu Dhabi, if you just look at Ras Al Khaimah, you're going to have the first casino in the Middle East in the next 3 years. And that's going to turbocharge the number of tourists coming to Ras Al Khaimah from something like 1.5 million last year to well over 6 or 7 million arrivals every year starting 26, 27. There is growth in using the port infrastructure here to, for instance, using UAE as a gateway to Africa, which is already happening through the Dragon Mart and everything else.
And Pat, would you highlight any other key players in the geography?
The other Emirates are buzzing with new activity, particularly Ras Al Khaimah in its development of the hospitality sector and other areas as well. But the principal investment locations will still remain Abu Dhabi, Dubai. They're the clusters, business clusters, largely because they're attractive, real estate, advanced infrastructure, connectivity, all the tick boxes that investors look for. I would say Dubai's financial sector will remain the major financial hub, even with the growth in the other federations. It is emerged as the preferred and remain the wealth hub for many entrepreneurs, and particularly for the rich Asian families. We've seen the inflow coming from there. And you mentioned about safety, security. That's a definite plus factor as well for investors, particularly investors who are coming as a long-term destination with their families, education, hospitalities, all of those key areas. And in terms of the Asia building more relation, stronger, definitely I would say China is a recent entry in recent years, and bilateral trade between the two combined with US, EU and UK in 2021-22, it certainly overtook the US and the EU in 2021-22. And China is looking to continue to build blocks as part of its very ambitious highly dubious at times as well. The BRI project, which is wanting to connect from the mainland across Central Asia into Middle East, into Europe and Africa, where they have a very big footprint anyway. And besides China, India have taken a different level of footing now, particularly following the announcements in May 2022 of CBA. And both sides are hoping to boost bilateral trade from the current 60, 70 billion to almost 100 billion over within the next 5 years. And given what's been taking place, particularly from last year, the G20, BRICS Plus, announcement of the economic corridor, Middle East, India, Europe, is feasible if it remains more or less on track. Interestingly, almost 8.8 million Indians nationals reside in the GCC, and the largest proportion are residing, investing, doing business is in the UAE, something almost like 3.84% of that. So that's a big number. And they're not just looking at investing and trading in the areas which have been traditional, like energy, gems, and jewelry and machinery. Now they're looking at products like agro products, textile, pharmaceuticals, and electronics, very much like-minded, same vision on the business front. So watch out for that. I would say that would be the big powerhouses growing in the coming years. And on top of that, further afield, Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia. UAE is not just putting all his eggs in one or two baskets, by the way. It's building a corridor of opportunity across trade investment deals involving Southeast Asia.
I'm interested in learning more about these specific sectors and business models that key players in Asia-Pacific should keep an eye on. You mentioned the UAE's plan for economic diversification as well. Can you describe a bit more what it looks like? What are some of the strategies to develop the non-oil economy? I come back to you, Shankar, on this.
I think there's a huge amount of effort being put in UAE and in fact in the rest of GCC to diversify the economy for the day when fossil fuels run dry. So with that in mind, there is a big focus on using transportation as a strategy, technology, whether including fintech, big focus on artificial intelligence. There is also a major push in terms of taking a lead on climate change. UAE was led the COP28 program, and you would have seen the announcement that they were going to have a follow-up on the commitments made at COP28. And what you're seeing is also it is becoming an attractive regional hub for global businesses, not just in terms of GCC, but also using GCC as a base to go into the Stans or into Africa. And they've been building on their time zone advantage. And you can see some of the businesses and family offices and hedge funds relocating from London, Singapore, or Hong Kong to places like the UAE. But also even within the oil sector, they are doing something really smart. Fujairah has become a major place for oil storage and bunkering. And why has it become important? Because it helps people reduce geopolitical risk by avoiding transportation of oil through the Strait of Hormuz. Whether it is a hydrocarbon economy or the new green economy, including hydrogen and EVs, there's a lot of potential.
The podcast series Shelter from the Storm, Investing in the Era of Uncertainty, is supported by Equities First. A word from our sponsor.
Equities First is proud to celebrate 20 years of pioneering progressive capital. We provide access to liquidity in 33 equity markets at favorable terms, while our partners retain 100% of the equity upside appreciation. Your interests are aligned with ours for the long term. Equities First is your solution for redefined financing. For more information, please visit equitiesfirst.com.
You have large corporations who are locating their operations here, but also definitely SMEs contributing to the economy. Does the UAE take any steps to level the playing field between SMEs and large firms to provide balanced opportunities to both?
For every large firm, there is a huge amount of dependency on the small and medium enterprises to supply them. All you need to do is visit places like the Dubai Investment Park or the Ras Al Khaimah Industrial Zone or the industrial zones in Abu Dhabi or elsewhere in the Emirates of UAE to see a very vibrant SME ecosystem in place. And it's not just the manufacturing sector, but if you look at the services sector, whether it's healthcare or even tourism, there is a lot of small and medium enterprises involved in that space. And there is also a banking sector here which supports the SME space. The large UAE banks, whether it's First Abu Dhabi Bank or Emirates National Bank of Dubai or Commercial Bank of Dubai. I would just add here that the UAE's recent removal from the FATF grey list is a sign that will emerge as a major financial center in the years to come.
Pat, do you have anything to add to this?
This year, Dubai launched a $136 million plan to help SMEs grow internationally with a focus on strategic sectors in its core Dubai International Growth Initiative. UAE government financial institutions, they have taken steps, but more needs to be done, particularly when it comes to extending loans and grants. Bureaucracy is still there and red tape. And to streamline this, it'll still need hurdles and delays. More than anything, I would say right at the top, which is also for the larger companies, is also a challenge is skilled labor shortages, rigid labor markets, retention issues, very much complex regulation environments, especially for newcomers.
What does collaboration look like in the UAE's ecosystem? This could be collaboration among sectors, between the public and private sector. Are we seeing some best practices in the UAE? Pat, let's continue with you on this one.
Well, that is across all the sectors. The government builds, companies come in, do business, and build layers of it. But I would say lifestyle is one of the best in the world, for instance. Major expansion of Dubai is planned. The government will build it with 5.8 million people. It's a target by 2040, making sure the private attractive health and education services. And this will bring in the private sector investors, including the Etihad Railway. So you can see the joint combination and the partnership between the public sector and private sectors ongoing continuously across all the sectors.
Just take Dubai. We get 17 million visitors a year. They go to restaurants. They need healthcare. They buy goods and services. Many of them are provided by small and medium enterprises. So therefore, you have a thriving SME system without direct government intervention in the first place. It's consumption-driven and need-based. The second thing I would say is actually to employ foreign talent at any level, blue-collar, white-collar, C-suite, is much easier in the UAE than elsewhere because of their open-door policy in terms of hiring foreigners. There are people from every country. That, for me, is what UAE is all about. It's also a country which has got a minister of tolerance, and people feel free to practice their different faiths and religions. You've just had Prime Minister Modi inaugurating a massive Hindu temple for which the land was actually allotted free by the government of Abu Dhabi. These are all small steps, but in the span of history, these are going to be significant events that makes UAE a great place to live, work, and play.
Pat, do you have any thoughts on the UAE strategy around skills development and talent?
Across the UAE, it's recognized very much that one of the things that as part of diversification is needed is Emiratization, local talent. And recent study also indicated a staggering 50% of UAE companies struggle with skill shortages in crucial areas. So we've talked a little bit about automation and AI is reshaping industries, rendering traditional skill assets as obsolete, and really demanding new tech-savvy talent. And that is not going to change. Emiratization, local talent will need to be nurtured, educated, and upgraded accordingly. And you will see that increasing across the UAE, less so in Dubai. Dubai is a makeup of the whole international community, but certainly in the smaller federations, the pressure is going to rise there. Investing in STEM education, promoting vocational training programs, tailored to evolving job demands, particularly local talent, is going to be very much right up there. And you can already see the US Skills Development Fund initiative is providing crucial financial support for upskilling, reskilling programs for Emirati citizens.
There's a huge amount of investment going in from the government, precisely in that area to improve skills and education, particularly in women. And they are taking leadership in sectors like climate and AI. The Sheikh Zayed AI University, for example, is a recent movement in this regard. What has impressed me a lot is meeting some of the younger people in the corridors of power in the Emirates.
Digital skills came up particularly. I want to stay on this topic for a bit more and talk about digitization in the UAE. A report published by the Dubai Chamber of Digital Economy estimates the national digital economy will grow to over $140 billion in 2031, up from today's nearly $38 billion. So, what are some of the steps the UAE is taking to leverage emerging technologies such as generative AI? Can the UAE become a regional or even global leader at the forefront of digital breakthroughs?
It's already seeking to create a dynamic digital economy driven by innovation, entrepreneurship, as part of diversification and growth agenda. UAE is one of the largest data center hubs in the Middle East, and more are planned, up to $1 billion in additional investments projected by 2026. And where are they investing heavily is broadband internet, cloud computing, smart cities is one of the priorities for UAE. And this is also where you are going to be seeing encouragement being made and coming for SME and startups, particularly local startups.
So if you want to really look at digitalization in UAE, all you need to do is travel through Dubai Airport. This is work in action and it is living. Lots of the government services here, if not everything, is digitalized. You have digital infrastructure, but more importantly, digital services. Whether it's your electricity and water or any services, postal services, everything is digitized, including your car parking. They even have a minister for the digital economy.
I understand that digitization is driven by the startup ecosystem as well. There is a national agenda for entrepreneurship that aims to establish the UAE as an entrepreneurial nation by 2031. What are some of the best practices you're seeing to enable this ecosystem for innovation and entrepreneurship?
Clearly, the government has a role to play in terms of providing catalytic funding, having the necessary ecosystem in place so that there is an acceptance of failure, and probably giving them some preferential treatment when it comes to getting them started in terms of business. Absolutely. But governments can't mandate entrepreneurial success. Entrepreneurs need to have that fire in the belly themselves. So the best thing actually that the UAE does is it creates the enabling ecosystem and infrastructure and stays away from entrepreneurs' heads. And that is why you will see entrepreneurship flourish here. Clearly, Emirati entrepreneurs are flourishing, but equally there are a lot of non-Emirati entrepreneurs who have moved to UAE because they find this environment and overall investment milieu here very nourishing.
We've been talking about opportunities so far, but of course, investments are not completely immune to risks. Pat, you've already mentioned some of the challenges as well. Talent shortages and attracting and keeping skilled labor for sustainable development. What are the risks businesses and investors from Asia-Pacific need to be aware of?
There is geopolitical risk, of course. We're seeing what's happening in the neighboring countries, and that makes investors pretty jittery as well. How quickly become a regional wide. Secondly, I would say one of the areas is difficulty in finding a local sponsor in certain sectors and activities where 100% foreign ownership is not permitted. Even where 100% is permitted, you still require local contacts and network. Foreign company must get their head around and familiarize themselves with local talent regulations to maintain compliance in this regard. And thirdly, I would say large-scale cyber attacks, data fraud. Added to that is trying to bypass trade sanctions and increase concerns over limited money laundering. It's limited, but UAE has just been taken off the financial grey listing. Money laundering, counter-terrorism controls, all of this could alienate some partners in the West, particularly when it comes to sanctions on money laundering.
The opportunity is huge, but you shouldn't think it's a walkover because there are very strong local and overseas businessmen who have already established bases here, who are strong and competitive. So as Pat said, the broader conflicts in the region are always a concern. The bigger issue is going to be the US-China tensions and the overall geopolitics around it. UAE has definitely remained neutral and has built bridges. And as you know, UAE and Saudi Arabia recently joined BRICS. So they are building alliances outside of the traditional American alliance. But all of us can get caught up in a US-China political spat, and that's not going to go away. Last but not the least, I would say on the point that Pat made, sponsorship has pretty much been eliminated in every single sector and is becoming less and less of an issue today. Networking and local domain knowledge is important, but I don't think necessarily you need to partner with anybody here.
These are all very useful insights. To wrap up the episode, I want us to look into the prospects of the business and investment opportunities in the UAE. Also, please add any remaining key points you want to highlight. Pat, can I get some thoughts from you?
Oh, well, we've talked endlessly about some of the opportunities, whether it's AI, digitalization, smart cities, hospitality, all of those areas. Everything is an opportunity for foreign companies. At the same time, you know, we are living in a more complex, interconnected global environment. And Dubai is right in the center of it. And over the years, foreign companies, whether it's from Asia, whether it's from the West, whether it's Africans or Europeans, they're all part of that mix. So that comes with huge challenges. You can fix the economics when things go wrong. You can pump more money, change policies. But geopolitics is one of the biggest challenges facing not just the global climate, but also the Middle East. And Dubai is part of the world. Nevertheless, it is still one of the most attractive, effective business hubs where companies can operate very freely and very much in comfort. Regulations, one stop, everything is very crystal clear. And as I said, UAE never stops. It keeps building, whether it's in the hospitality sector, whether it's in the manufacturing or building railway links across the GCC.
I would just say that, look, the long-term growth fundamentals for GCC-Asia trade are strong. Trade will increase as the Asia's middle class and its economies grow. And particularly important is the energy demand expansion over the next decade. And that's going to be a big driver of that collaboration. But equally, the Gulf's attempts or efforts to diversify their economies and develop their non-oil sectors, especially when it comes to carbon emissions and technology, will be another catalyst for cooperation. The other area is the growing focus of these Gulf's sovereign wealth funds, which are now become among the biggest in the world. They're focused on investments into Asia and particularly into India, Indonesia, and China. And that will again be a strong pivot for the Gulf Asia-Pac collaboration, whether that takes the form of including dual listings, which has been talked about in some instances in the capital markets.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you, Pat and Shankar, for sharing your views and insights. And thank you to our listeners for spending time with us. The series is supported by Equities First and is part of Asia Perspectives from Economist Impact. If you have any feedback or questions about this podcast, or any work from Economist Impact, email us at asiaperspectives@economist.com. Please make sure to subscribe so that you receive updates when new podcast episodes become available. From the editorial team at Economist Impact, thank you for listening.